One of the most popular books of the 19th century was Ernest Renan's The Life of Jesus. He portrayed Jesus as an extraordinary human being, a gifted teacher, an inspiring individual, but certainly not the Son of God. Nor did he accept that Jesus worked any miracles, since Renan believed that miracles certainly didn't occur. So what was left in this controversial book was an unusual life, beautifully described, with considerable imaginative power. The trouble with a secularized version of Jesus is that it simply ignores what stands out on page after page of Mark's Gospel, that his immediate followers regarded him as a figure of mystery and power, someone they treated with respect and awe, and who quite frankly terrified them at times. Think of their reaction when they saw him walking on water towards their boat, or when he calmed a storm. This was someone with mastery over the forces of nature. From the moment Mark's Gospel begins, Jesus comes across as someone whose word has power to uproot human lives so that they abandon their occupations and follow him. And while Mark stresses that Jesus gives high priority to his ministry of preaching, it doesn't actually give us much detail about what he taught. But we are given a bit of information about the way in which the words of Jesus have authority over demons and about its power to heal many forms of human distress. Jesus is interested in rolling back the forces of evil, and he backs up his teaching with demonstrations of his capacity to do just that on a here and now basis. Indeed, what we listened to this morning was the tail end of a typical day in the life of the ministry of Jesus, and healing miracles are high on the agenda. As we dig beneath the text of Mark's Gospel and consider how he writes about healing miracles, we find out that he has a singular approach to this aspect of the ministry of Jesus. Miracle stories, that is to say exorcisms, healings, resuscitations and nature miracles, take up over 200 verses, a greater amount than are devoted to the Passion narrative, and just about half the content of the Gospel prior to the arrival of Jesus in Jerusalem. Whereas in the rest of the Gospels, miracles are called semeia or signs, Mark describes them as dunamis, in other words, works of power. At dusk, as the Sabbath ends, people are free to move about again, and so the inhabitants of Capernaum cluster around the door of Simon and Andrew. They're hoping that the various illnesses they're presenting with will be met by the overflowing quality of the benefits that flow from the presence of the Spirit, empowered stronger one, and their hopes are not in vain. I mentioned before that we've been listening into a typical day in the life of Jesus of Nazareth. Through every part of the day, he's giving out, raising people up, restoring them to new life, whether inside or outside the house he's staying in. We might note in passing that in the midst of this activity, he avoids the trap of running on empty. Rising before dawn, he goes away to be by himself and commune with God. In silence, he's listening to the still small voice, tuning into the one who is the source of all this healing energy. This is the indispensable recharging point if he's going to be able to go on having other typical days of healing and helping. We might like to ask ourselves, do I have these oasis times with God as a regular part of my life? It's particularly the case that when we're in fields of endeavour that involve talk, that we need regular times of listen. In the weeks that follow, we'll be hearing about the healing ministry of Jesus in all sorts of situations and in response to all sorts of needs. There'll be a steady escalation in the depth of human misery that's tackled. A leper, a paralytic, a man with a withered limb. In steady progression, these terrible scourges will be overcome as Jesus goes about bringing comfort and joy. As the sway of evil over human affairs is step by step pushed back, it is as though we are getting closer and closer to the heart of darkness. The story that we're being drawn into has a particular destination point in mind. The narrative is shaped in such a way that each of these stories of healing and deliverance is taking us to the foot of the cross. Mark sees what will take place there as being the most powerful act of healing imaginable for all of humankind. We've become accustomed to seeing the death and resurrection of Jesus as being about the overcoming of guilt and death. An act of healing, that's a novel thought. It means that we've been brought to consider what one recent commentator called the love behind the passion. What is it that brought Jesus to offer his very self as the stuff of our deliverance? It means that as the story unfolds, we move from considering what he is, a healer and exorcist who goes about doing good, to the who he is, the person who confronts evil at its source and absorbs its impact in such a way that he draws it into the very heart of God, there to contain it and neutralize it. Jesus and God are so attuned to one another in the continual exchange of love going on between them that he is prepared to go to the root cause of our distress in a way that means he's gone looking for trouble. The church of our day is recovering the ministry of healing, and that is great. But often our rationale for doing that is simply about being kind and about relieving human distress. The perspective of Jesus was different and went deeper than that. He saw his ministry of healing as a frontal attack on the forces of evil that were the source of the disease and death that made life miserable for everyone around him. And he had no illusions about the response of the forces of evil to his highly effective ministry. As one contemporary Eucharistic prayer puts it, he healed the sick though he himself would suffer. He offered life to sinners though death would hunt him down. Those who desire to major in the ministry of healing, to make God's signs and wonders powerfully evident in the lives of those they reach out to touch, had better be prepared for this costly dimension to what it is they propose to do. The forces of evil won't just sit around and let their control of the neighbourhood slip away from them. They will fight back and will seek to take out those who have become channels of God's inconvenient healing grace. And sometimes the way they will seek to do that is through the inner flaws and weaknesses of these ministers of grace. The temptation to become drunk on the spiritual power is great indeed. Which is why Jesus went into the wilderness before he got started in his ministry. He wrestled with the temptations that were peculiar to him and got the better of them before he presumed to go and sort other people out. We need to do the same. Which is why the Lenten invitation to go into the wilderness to spend time with God in a time of self-denial will be very good news for us. Thank goodness Lent is near. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.